Hey guys, this is Eddie McClintock. I play Special Agent Pete Latimer on Warehouse 13. At least I did before they canceled us. Shh. And you guys are listening to Paul, Ian, and Matt on the McSauce Podcast. Check it out. What's up?
Welcome to episode 366 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Hello.
And Matt Cassell.
Do you realize that it's only 300 more episodes to go?
Until we get to the Devil's Podcast. I'm pretty excited.
Is that whenever the Devil, is he going to guest on 666? listeners, hold us to that because you're part of this as well. You'll be going to hell.
I was kind of hoping that once you know I hit that intro for 666, the ground would shake and open up, and the earth would be swallowed.
That one is going to be Pod at the Devil.
Write it down now. Yeah. Doesn't matter what we do during the episode. That's going to be the name of the episode. But we're not here to talk about satanic trappings. We're here on this beautiful Monday night, March 29th, to talk about some Falcon and Winter Soldier, a little The Suicide Squad trailer, and maybe some rumors about Warner Brothers selling the old DC shop.
We can get bargain basement prices on Batmen and women of all stripes.
If Robert Kirkman can buy it, perhaps. But before we jot down Robert Kirkman's social security number and buy ourselves some DC books, we do housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
The home of our social security numbers, McSauce.com. If you go there right now and click on social security numbers in the drop down menu, you can find all of our personal information there at McSauce.com. If you'd like to talk to us and not set up credit cards in our names, you can go to all the different socials, be it Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all those different locations. You can reach out to us, message us, and let us know what you think about the pod, what you'd like to hear more or less. Do you like long episodes? Do you like short episodes? Hit us up on all the social medias and we'll be able to respond to you in kind. If you would like, I don't know, a gift for a loved one, go to TeePublic and you can find t-shirts and mouse pads. And
I feel like this is more like a gift for a hated one, but do go on.
Yes. If you want to give somebody that you loathe a McSauce mouse pad, go to TeePublic and type in MCSOSS.
You know, the quality of those mouse pads are actually really good.
We should get one just for the shit of it, just to have around these parts.
I want a surprise cheese talk mouse pad. Don't you think mouse pad, cheese, it kind of goes together?
How perfect. You marketing maven.
Thank you, you alliteration
king. So, if you want more jokes like that, you can go to patreon.com. You can subscribe and pay money to hear quality jokes just like that. If you plunk down $5 of your hard-earned money, we will send you a survey, you fill the survey out, and we will give you a specialized episode, as well as that unlocks a whole year's worth of different episodes that we've recorded that are a little bit outside of the box of what we normally do. A big part of what we do on Patreon is we do Transformers episodes, Matt and myself do video game episodes, we have some music episodes that we try to put out there every single month. So a lot of good and different stuff on the Patreon. And if you are looking for something special, maybe you want to get give a loved one a podcast for their birthday, sign up and we'll do a podcast for that person special for their birthday.
What a great idea.
I'm a marketing maven. What can I say?
Well, let's not get too excited. We can only have one of those.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
What's a maven anyway? I mean, given the context,
isn't it like
clues,
a queen or something like that?
I don't know.
No, like a maven's like a master of a specialized subject.
Okay.
You know, I assumed Merriam-Webster that for us. No, you're doing work again. God damn it, Ian.
No, I'm looking it up.
So
what does Merriam-Webster say a maven is? Ew. Okay,
I'm not finding it.
I'll settle for... so it's a made-up word. Great, Paul.
Matt, while I'm looking this up, why don't you tell us what you thought about The Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
I thought that it was so good at putting me to sleep.
Maven is an expert or a connoisseur.
Okay, well, apparently Falcon and the Winter Soldier is a maven at... making me sleepy.
Yeah, Matt, you didn't even get through episode one. Is that correct?
It's correct. I tried. WandaVision left a pretty sour taste in my mouth. And I was telling Ian last week, I'm just fatigued with Marvel stuff in general. Paul, who could be bothered to watch these shows that just feel like more of the same? WandaVision devolved into maybe even subpar Marvel. And the first 20 minutes or so of Falcon and Winter Soldier was really boring.
I liked WandaVision better than you did, but by the end, I was like, all right, you know, I think I was interested in things that they didn't mean for me to be so interested in. Like, I don't really care about Wanda. Go find that white Vision. Like, I need more, you know, Paul Bettany and, you know, Vision learning how to be Vision again. Like, that's what I wanted from the end of that.
I thought he was blue after the end of that, for that second to last episode.
Oh, because he was sad.
No, because he was in a blue light, and I didn't realize, oh, shit, that's the white Vision. I just thought it was, like, a blue version of him, and I was like, all right. Hmm. So it's Dr. Manhattan.
Falcon and Winter Soldier, you know, I've watched both episodes, and it's cool. It's fine. It's okay. I'm not, like, super excited about it, but I don't generally like these characters anyway.
You didn't generally like Wanda or Vision.
It's true, I didn't, and that show did really invest me in both of those characters. I am much more interested in Wanda and absolutely Vision after this. So, like, I'm since WandaVision was able to do that for me, someone who railed against those characters hardcore on this very podcast.
Pull the clip, Andy.
That show turned me around. So I'm hoping this does the same thing for Falcon and Winter Soldier. I think it may do it for Winter Soldier. I'm more interested in his story and, like, he's dealing with PTSD and, like, trying to awkwardly reintegrate himself back into normal life after, you know, all the brainwashed Winter Soldier stuff and, you know, then, you know, kind of getting his shit back together in Wakanda, and now he's back on American soil trying to live a life. Like, that's interesting to me. But I don't know. Sam's just like, yeah, I had the shield and I gave it up, but I'm still just an army guy doing missions.
Well, I would say that that's giving Sam's journey a little bit of short shrift.
Maybe a little bit.
I would say a lot.
You big Sam shrift. Wilson guy over there?
Well, do you understand... Do you understand why he's not Captain America or why he turned the shield down?
Because he doesn't think America's ready for a black Captain America.
And I find, being a African-American myself, I find that stuff, that is interesting about it. The him having a conversation with Rhodey as well, another character that totally understands that they have a shorthand whenever they're talking about exactly why he's shying away from trying to become this symbol. I think it's interesting. Now, if you would lay out the beats of the story, I think that I would be very interested in all the beats, but whenever I see it actually played out on the screen, unfortunately, it's not quite as interesting as I would want it to be. And I think that Anthony Mackie is a great actor, and he's funny and engaging. And I think that Sebastian Stan also is a good actor, and he brings a different kind of presence to a world weariness to the character.
Yeah.
But I'm not as in as like the bones of what this is supposed to be about.
I think the second episode, did you watch them both?
I did. Yeah.
I thought the second episode offered me a lot more because you get an entire episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier together. And, you know, with the way Sam needs to deal with his race and being like the guy Cap picked to be Captain America, and like having Bucky there, like completely supporting him by saying, "Steve said do this, you should do this, just fucking
but
do
I don't
it.
Think
Why
it's,
don't you do it?
It's not, but that's not support though. That's him being angry, like he's mad that Sam turned it down.
Well, that's,
but I don't think he fully understands why.
Right, and that's part of what I was just gonna say is that he is on Sam's side. He wants him to do this, but he doesn't understand that aspect. Like Bucky doesn't get the race component of like, and it's not even something Sam has been able to say out loud to maybe anyone but Rhodey, because Rhodey just gets it.
So what's the point of this show? Like, why did they feel like they needed to pair these two characters? Did they think that the chemistry was undeniable between the two of them in one short clip where they're sitting in the back of a car and there's a little bit of quippy banter?
Well, these two characters are connected naturally by their connection to Steve Rogers. And
that would be like the equivalent of like Paul is like Captain America, and Ian, you're the Winter Soldier and I'm the Falcon.
Okay.
And it would be like if Paul got old and died, and then we were left to just carry on the legacy because we're connected because of our connection to Paul.
If Paul was a symbol of hope for, at this point, the entire world, yeah, sure. It would be similar to that. You don't see how these two characters are, you know, they're connected by that. Like, that doesn't matter to you? That,
No, I mean, obviously, there is a connection. There's a common connection, but not directly. They're tangentially connected through Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Not to one another the way that maybe, you know, if you take out of consideration, like, budgets and actor salaries or schedules or popularity, whatever, are there not two better connected characters? Like, would the Hulk and Thor show be a better option?
Well, so you're thinking about it as sort of like a show and popularity, if that's what angle you're going with. I think that they're looking to tell a specific story about the vacuum that is left in this world without a Captain America. And the two people that, A, his longtime best friend forever, back in the, you know, 1930s, and then his when he rejoined society, his new friend that became his sidekick that he felt would be a great symbol to carry on his legacy. I think that dynamic is very interesting, and it makes sense. I don't think it's as strange as you're saying it is, or as, I don't know. Do you feel like it doesn't make any sense that they would want to tell this story? Like,
I guess it's fine.
The vacuum that Captain America would leave in the superhero landscape is a big one.
I
was just going to say they've kind of already tackled that with the second Spider-Man movie, the vacuum that was left with Tony Stark's absence once he died. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it might be a little interesting based on the reviews, the early reviews that I'm getting from you guys. It doesn't sound like it's all that interesting. And I know the bit that I watched wasn't interesting. And I definitely feel like there was stronger chemistry. If you're looking for chemistry amongst characters, I feel like there's probably a stronger pairing that you could cherry pick out of the MCU to do a show. But I think we all know that this was made because these are two lesser characters. They're lesser actors in terms of like their profile, and they were able to put them in a series to create this. And I don't know. That's not.
I don't think that it was a
to me.
Big so consideration
would,
about
you,
the.
Who would you want then?
I just said, give me Thor and the Hulk.
They did. It was called Ragnarok, and you didn't like it.
Yeah,
give me a show. give me a fucking show.
So but Thor has.
Is there a story
really
to tell
to do
with
Captain
two?
America? So would it be?
No.
Natasha,
I mean, just even
then?
even with those two, like there isn't in the way that the Marvel Universe is currently constructed. There's no real story. They did tell the story of Thor and. In the Hulk, it was Planet Thor, and it was in Ragnarok. They told that story.
Planet Hulk, right?
Yeah, Planet
that's what
Hulk.
That's what I said. Planet Hulk in Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, like I mean, both sides of this talk are true. Sebastian Stan and Anthony Mackie are going to come cheap. They're going to do a TV show. Also, they are the perfect characters to write a story about. How do we replace Captain America? Because they are his best friends.
And like, they're the two logical choices.
If you're
going to
write this
Captain
story,
America.
It works out perfectly that these guys are cheap and can do a TV show, and they are the perfect characters for the show.
Now,
they may not be... Like, the first episode I thought was like, ooh, man, this is like slow, it's a lot of setup. But the second one picks it up a little bit. I'm afraid that it's only 6 episodes this season. I'm afraid that we're going to get to episode 6 and it's going to wrap and I'm going to be like, oh, this didn't, I needed like 3-4 more episodes to really pull this together.
So we talked about pay considerations and we can only get them, you know, because they're cheaper for a TV show. Well, it's 6 episodes. It probably took as long to film a movie as it did. So I don't, and Disney has all the money in the world. So I'm not necessarily sure. And I could be wrong, Matt, but I don't think that pay was really a consideration. I think that they had a specific kind of story that they wanted to tell. Granted, like effects and things like that probably come in, but I don't think that the actors and how much they make was a really huge consideration with this.
Well, I think that my assumption is that they would be saving some of the more high profile actors / characters for feature films. COVID notwithstanding would end up in theaters and then obviously bring it to the Disney Plus service after that.
Do you think that we're changing around the way that maybe we just talked a little bit before about HBO Max and TV or movies?
I don't think studios want to do that. I think that there's evidence to support that they don't want to do it. Hence the double dipping on some of the like the bigger features that come to Disney Plus, where they still charge the extra $30 on top of your subscription. Warner Brothers is saying that in 2021, their movies are not going to be released day and date on HBO Max. It was a 2021 thing only.
You mean 2022?
In 2022, okay. They're not going to do that. It's only for this year because of the special circumstances.
Do you think that they'll get strong-armed into responding to... If the fans overwhelmingly like this, do you think that they would like go back on that stance?
No. The only thing that I think will affect that is if the numbers in theaters stays low.
Yeah.
Which I think it could. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel personally on going back to the theater now that we're getting, you know, the vaccine out there. We're starting to get maybe a little bit more comfortable. I still don't know how comfortable I am going to the theater, even after a vaccination. And I quite like being at home. And that's coming from a person that loves the movies.
Yeah, I honestly don't ever need to go back to a theater again. Like, I'm totally fine getting all this stuff at home.
I mean, we are paying for it, too. Yeah. We're paying a shitload of money.
Yeah.
You know, spread out amongst all these services. It's kind of like doing the subscription to the movie theater, like the Cinemark. Like, you know, you pay whatever it is, and you get a free movie every month or whatever.
Movie pass. Whatever.
It's kind of like the same thing, only now it's being streamed to your home.
The theater, what I would say about the theater is it's likely one of the more safe indoor spaces. What do you do when you go to the theater? People aren't really, hopefully, and if they want to keep their head on their neck, they aren't going there and talking throughout the movie. And yeah, sure, there's some laughter, there's some eating and everything.
A lot of coughing,
but it's not like if you go to a restaurant where people are actively there to laugh, talk, socialize, have their mask off. Like a restaurant is, and it's a smaller space. Much more worrisome than a theater, in my mind.
I hear you, Ian. I feel like they're all kind of, like, you're still in a close proximity to a bunch of germs and stuff.
Could be.
Yeah, maybe the spittle isn't flying as freely in a theater that it might at a restaurant, but, like, all that shit where people are packed tightly, movie theater, restaurant, concert.
Do you feel like you're ever going to rebound and ever not care about spittle?
I think in time I will care less, but I think that this has irrevocably affected me and probably all of us to some degree, where we will always be somewhat more cognizant of germs. We're all going to be a little bit germophobic now.
I think what this has taught me about the theater is, the only reason I was going to the theater is because it was the only place I was going to be able to see this, like, before everything got spoiled. Like, I'm going to be so fucking pissed next year when I can't just watch this shit at home and I have to go to the theater. I mean, I'm not going to be pissed. I don't mind going to the theater. You know, I love all the McSauce field trips and stuff. And, like, there is there is something really nice about the theater experience. But, man, there's something really cool about just having this at home that I prefer. But, Matt, I think you should watch the first two episodes. As we know, any TV series, it can't be rated on its pilot alone, and you didn't even make it all the way through episode one. Like,
did you see it?
I did watch it, and I understand how it's a little bit slow, but shows do need a little bit of time to ramp up. You know,
yeah, Matt,
that
you're not wrong. It is a little bit stale. I'll say that.
And the hype on this, even online, is much less than WandaVision. I mean, WandaVision hit that first episode came out, and the internet was just like, it couldn't stroke itself hard enough to WandaVision. I've barely heard anything about Falcon.
I heard
and Winter
that
Soldier.
That this was breaking streaming records and stuff. And I'm like, what?
Where'd you hear that? That's crazy.
I don't know. The internet
on
told me.
FalconWinterSoldier.com. Anthony Mackie's Twitter.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we all know shows take a while to get going. So yeah, give it two episodes, see what happens.
I will, just for you.
And I'm not here to cheerlead for this show.
Let me put this into some perspective, though. So I watched the night that the Justice League came out. I watched it beginning to end, stayed awake, no problem. The very next night, I tried to do the Falcon and Winter Soldier.
You're
I was
all
out
tired.
In 20 minutes.
That's because you were tired.
You blew
tired
your load on
out.
Justice League.
I guess that was what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I can't defend.
Go ahead.
I can't defend the entertainment value of this. It does. It is stale. I do like what it's about. I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah, Ian. What you're telling me sounds compelling. But I also know what I saw to a point, which was not much, admittedly, but it was boring. And I really do have Marvel fatigue at this point. There's very little that excites me. And I feel like part of the reason is by the end of WandaVision, like, I gave WandaVision a 6, but that was based on the strength of those early episodes when I didn't know what was going on, and I sort of reveled in that, like, total kind of mystery and being in the dark. Those final episodes were dog shit. They were absolutely terrible.
The series finale was very standard.
It left such a bad taste in my mouth, and I'm just tired of it. Mm-hmm. What can I tell you, man? Like, yeah. Maybe I'll feel differently once I see a Spider-Man trailer or something. But even like the prospect of another Spider-Man, that Spider-Man coming back to the silver screen, doesn't do anything for me.
That's interesting.
And you know what? That's not the only property I feel that way about. Star Wars is another one.
Mm-hmm.
I am fatigued with Star Wars. Like, May the 4th, there's going to be a new series coming out, called The Bad Batch. Paul, who could possibly care less? I'm not going to watch it.
Matt, I could possibly care less. Did you see the Bad Batch episodes of The Clone Wars?
Nope.
I did. I don't care.
Bad Batch always reminds me of Keebler Elves soft batch cookies. So I'm like, are they like
they're the
this?
Ones with fish
they're
the tails ones in
that,
them?
They're the ones that are
they're
bad. They have shrimp
good.
In them and everything.
It's unfortunate.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, shrimp tails. Yeah,
I feel like I could go for a Keebler Elf cookie, right? Paul, do you have any of those?
I love a soft batch cookie.
In the McSauce Studios
no,
kitchen?
No, we don't.
It's a shame.
I'm not interested in the Bad Batch, but I've never been a clones guy anyway. I don't care. It's give me the interesting characters that can move shit with their mind. I've never cared about the clones, so yeah, I'm not gonna watch the Bad Batch.
Do we just have general fatigue? Because yes. I was driving here and I was listening to a podcast of these guys that review TV, right? And they're talking about some French crime show that they were like really fucking excited about. And I thought to myself, I can't remember the last time that there was a movie or a TV show that I was that excited about, that passionate for.
I'm glad we do a podcast about this kind of stuff.
I know. And
I'm not passionate about anything, but let me sit for an hour every week to talk about the stuff I don't like.
I think we at
one point
initially were very not fanatical about comic books, movies, Star Wars, pop culture, and throughout the year's worth of podcasting, you can listen to it right now, 360 plus, you know, if you add in the Patreon episodes, more than a year's worth of us talking about stuff. Did we burn ourselves out? Is this our fault?
No, it's not our fault. I think the product it's so frequent. There's so much of it. You can't help but get fatigued. We predicted when they announced all the Star Wars projects that were going to come out. I was thinking, like, that's really cool and exciting, that much Star Wars. But reality tells you, it dictates that you will get burned out on it eventually. And I remember we said that's going to happen. And guess what? It happened.
Yeah, like, there's really good stuff out there. There's stuff that I really like. But like, I've never been ever in my entire life, even like as a kid, I've never been one of those people that, like, you know, sees a trailer and just cries because I'm so excited that this is coming out. And I've never been like overly excitable on the outside. But there is stuff that has come out that I have absolutely loved that I've watched in like the last couple years. Unfortunately, none of it's really been like superhero stuff or Star Wars or like the genre stuff that the bulk of this podcast has been based on for so long. Like, I like aspects of Star Wars. Like, I loved Vision, if not the entirety of WandaVision, like it's like bits and pieces at this point, and maybe that's our new normal because we're being given so much. We need to mine everything a little bit deeper to really find the stuff that speaks to us because we're just inundated.
Yeah, we're just so jaded with all of this hitting us, you know, over and over and over in waves and waves. And if it's not this trailer, it's the next trailer. What a bad fucking place for us to be on this podcast that we're supposed to be talking about the things that we like. Well, listeners, do you like this? Do you like hearing us wrestle with our pop culture mortality?
Maybe this is just part of the McSauce journey. Like the listeners that have been there have been on this with us.
And, listeners,
know, they've heard us be really excited about Green Lantern in the beginning and then hate The Last Jedi, and now they're walking through this malaise of who cares.
This is what I want the listeners to do. Each one of you out there, and you know who you are, just send us to either a Twitter or a Facebook, all the shit that I listed at the beginning of this stupid show. Send me over the current thing that you are super fucking passionate about, the thing that you love the most, be it a TV show, an album, a musician, whatever.
Yeah,
whatever
that's a great idea.
I'd like to know. I'd like to hear, what would you prescribe a sickly McSauce, you know, pop culture guys that are just so burned out? What's going to be the antidote?
My passion exists still, but for the things that I used to love, I feel like they have evolved into things that I don't love anymore. Because I still have the same passion for those things, the old versions of them, like that still exists. And then I have residual passion that I'm channeling into other interests.
I like residual passion. It's like the passion that wells up on the side of
it, runs down and gets a little crusty on the edge.
I got a little residge passion here.
There's stuff that I really like right now, and stuff that I've seen recently. Like last week I watched the original Black Christmas, and it was fucking awesome. It was so good.
The Bob Clark movie?
With Margot Kidder?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. I fucking loved it. Why did you watch it right before Easter? What's wrong with you?
I was hoping one of those girls would get resurrected. because it was next on the list of stuff that I've been blazing through. But there's stuff that...
Dude, I loved that movie.
It was awesome. Like, there's stuff that I get passionate about. It just isn't really Falcon and Winter Soldier. You know, I like very much like aspects of The Mandalorian, but now that like I'm looking down the barrel of it's all Mandalorians and the fight for Mandalore next season, I'm like, who could care about this? But like the lone wolf out there doing bounty hunter business, you know, just trying to get by. Like, I thought all that stuff was great, but, and I don't want to immediately dismiss it because I think there's a cool story that could be built with, you know, the guy that doesn't want to be the leader being forced into that role. And like, there's
much like we talked about this weekend with Ultra Magnus. That's you fucking hate that archetype. Hate that kind of character.
No, I don't. I like that kind of character, but I think there's a lot of I have a lot of misdirected emotion tied up in Ultra Magnus that we can revisit at a different time. I think he's been unfairly a target for me for a lot of years. Matt, do you know who Ultra Magnus is?
Don't care.
Okay. Do you care about the Suicide Squad?
After that trailer?
Oh, boy.
Ooh. where this is going.
Same place Falcon and Winter Soldier did. In the Malaise Mobile.
I'm so glad we're still talking about bags of dicks. 2016 called and they want their bags of dicks back.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't love a lot of the jokes. I did like
jokes?
A few of them. Yes, sure. I did laugh.
I think
at some points during that trailer, but the stuff that I'm sure was like the over the top, you know, kill the audience laughing. Oh, the bags of dicks. Yeah.
I thought
to your point, Matt. It's not. Let's chill with the edgelord humor.
I thought the John Cena portion of the bags of dicks bit was really funny. Like, I think
I didn't
he delivers
love
that
it.
Perfectly as
I did like whenever they're like, why would they put bags of, you know, penises on the
that was
you know,
awesome
and
funny.
He was like, who knows what madmen do? Like,
that was
that
the
is funny
part.
That's
but
funny.
The everything leading up to it was Rian Johnson levels of funny. And I feel like James Gunn was mining his Twitter feed from the era that got him fired from Marvel to try to insert his jokes into this. I don't know. Maybe
I mean, legitimately, he could have been, right?
It seems that way.
Yeah.
Because none of that shit was funny then. It's not funny now. This looks no better than the David or the was David Ayer's version.
David Ayer. Yeah.
David Ayer that we got. I don't know what this is. Is this a reboot? Is it a sequel? It's got some of the same characters.
Soft boot.
Does it take place before? Is this a prequel?
I think it is a sequel. I think it takes place after because the Suicide Squad is together.
Yep.
They are doing things. Yeah, it's definitely
am I missing something?
Sequel.
Did the boomerang guy die?
No. He's in this trailer.
He lived in the first one?
He did. Mm-hmm.
Who was the character that died in the first one quickly?
Slipknot.
Who's Slipknot? What was his power?
I just remember his name.
The band in the early 2000s.
Okay.
Iowa, I believe he's from.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like,
hated it, huh? You're not a big Guardians person, so this was like Guardians turned up to 11
with
potty
like,
mouth.
I like Guardians. I do.
Yeah.
I somewhat resent what it partly what it ushered in and sort of reset a bit of the standard for what the MCU has devolved into. But I don't think like potty humor and, you know, crude humor is
the angels coming on us was that's when I was like, ugh,
yeah.
Why?
It's not funny.
Like,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's like, it's like the audience that would find this funny are like 13-year-olds, but it's an R-rated movie.
It's everyone that would dress up as Deadpool at a convention.
But here's the thing. Like,
it is, yeah.
This is what's happening to us, guys. We're just getting older. You know what I mean? Like, those jokes probably would have hit, you know, 10 years ago when we were in a different mind state and we weren't so used to seeing our heroes or these kind of comic book characters like swear and talk about dicks. Like, I feel like that would have been funny back in the day.
Well,
it isn't anymore.
I didn't hate this trailer. I thought the angel splooging on us was stupid, but I thought the bag of dicks bit was funny because what's John Cena's character's name?
Who could ever
He's
know?
Like
the American or something?
Something like that, but he's like, I'd fucking eat all these dicks and clean up this
Captain
for justice.
Yeah,
for,
or he was like,
liberty.
For liberty.
For liberty.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so good. And John Cena is so, he's really funny.
Yeah, his delivery is good.
And
I think this movie
and I like,
will be good.
I like Joel
but
Kinnaman.
But these moments are bad.
I like Joel Kinnaman a lot. I think his Rick Flag, his like straight man to Harley silliness, like works on that rooftop scene. Where Harley gets silly and he's like, if you have a personalized license plate, he's like, no, that's not that. Like, Joel Kinnaman, like, and Idris Elba, I think they have the capability of grounding this, and I think there will be more heartfelt moments that Guardians delivered in this movie. We just didn't get them in this trailer.
Yeah, I get that sense as well, and I'll tell you this, I think the funniest part, the best line, was when I don't even know who said it. Was like, we're all gonna die, and the one dude's like, oh, I hope so.
It was
funny.
Polka Dot Man, who an actor. He was in Ant-Man. He's a famous actor.
He's in a lot
in
of
stuff.
He's
stuff.
In one of my favorite movies, Prisoners. He has a small role in that.
He's in The Dark Knight?
He's in the
I believe he is. Yeah. He's the crazy guy.
He plays Abracadabra in The Flash, the TV show.
There you go.
Yeah, like I think this movie has, I think this, it has the capability of working pretty well. Like
I agree. I don't think this was a very good trailer, though.
I don't think so either.
It was like it personally it purposefully highlighted, look how bonkers this is.
Yeah.
Yep. And I was like, that isn't the stuff that would get me to go see this movie anyway. So maybe it was just, I think it's just targeted at a different subsection of fan than what we are. So that's
13
why
year olds.
Yeah, I mean, honestly,
it's
they got
an R-rated
too.
Movie for 13-year-olds.
I don't think James Gunn, like, I don't think that was like what he set out to do. I'm gonna make a movie for 13-year-olds. I think he's doing what he likes, and it just happens to be really silly stuff.
Well, as he said when he got fired from Marvel before he got rehired, his he is a provocateur. He likes to be a little outrageous and be controversial, and I guess that's kind of what this was, at least in terms of its outrageousness.
Well, this team should work for him, but it should work in a we don't like these characters / violence way, instead of just, you know, like talking about dicks and splooge.
Exactly. This is an R-rated version of Guardians. It's not a group of nasty supervillains.
Yeah, and maybe we get that. Like,
we won't. Don't be stupid. We won't.
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna get like. I think we're gonna get a lot of, there's so many characters in this. Like, I don't think Nathan Fillion or the guy from SNL, like, I don't think they make it out of the first 10 minutes. Like, there's so many characters that you see in this, and we're going to get them for 10, 15 minutes of this movie. We're going to get maybe Joel Kinnaman, Idris Elba, and Harley from start to finish. But everyone else is, you know, up for grabs.
Who's the furry creature dude that was licking the glass? Who is that?
It's a character called Weasel.
Weasel. Who's playing Weasel?
That's Sean Gunn.
Is there a relation to
director James Gunn? It's his brother.
Huh. He's the same person that did all the body mocap for Rocket Raccoon, so he has a history of doing that in those movies.
He's James Gunn's personal Andy Serkis.
I thought he looked a little bit like Rocket the way he was moving. Why don't we go ahead and slap some polynomics on this, and then we'll move to our final topic of the night. For new listeners, this is our excitement rated on a 10-point scale, up against our expectations rated on a 10-point
scale. Well, just
scale.
Alongside. The alongside. Numbers never meet.
Right, they run parallel.
Two separate numbers on parallel tracks.
They run parallel infinitely.
I like that you say for new listeners. If there is a new listener out there, this is your first or second episode. Send us a message. We'll send you a fucking t-shirt. Like, I'd like to know who our new listeners are now that convention season is non-existent.
Anybody new is listening to this and they're going to be like, I'm going to kill myself now. I can't listen. Or they'll just send us a note telling us to kill ourselves because we're
that'd
so
be
miserable.
Exciting. Do that as well.
I don't think we're miserable. I think we're honest and we're being very, you know, we're just reflecting what we're experiencing with all of these different products. And I think a lot of other people are probably feeling the same way about stuff. Not everyone out there that, you know, besides Mixed Nation, not everyone out there is like, fuck you, this movie's gonna be fucking amazing. Suicide Squad's gonna be awesome. And now I'm sure there are a couple people hating that we dismissed the Bad Batch so quickly. Looking at you.
You know who
looking
there,
at you,
Bobby.
Bobby Lynn. But yeah, like,
is there
I think there's room for this kind of honesty.
Is there any Star Wars that Bobby doesn't like, or does he eat it all up?
I mean, he needs to message us. He's been really good and active, messaging us
lately. He's definitely going to message after this.
I'm excited about it.
Bobby, forgive me. I know I asked you this exact question before, and I forget what you said, but I think his answer was it wasn't like, yeah, The Last Jedi sucks. It was something a little softer of like, it was kind of like, well, I don't really like this, but I can let it slide.
I think
there's no hard line. This is terrible. Get it out of my Star Wars.
I'm almost there, man. Like, I feel compelled to like it because I love the Star Wars brand so much. But at some point, you can't kid yourself. You got to be real, and you have to look beyond your undying passion. And just because you may or may not love something as much as you love the rest of it, that doesn't diminish your love for the existing stuff that you do love.
That's true.
It's okay, Bobby.
It's not a this or that.
This is your come to Jesus.
Come to George Lucas moment. So Polonomics for this Suicide Squad trailer. Boy. My expectations are a 7. And my excitement is an 8. I'm kind of excited for this. I think this movie's going to deliver more than this trailer lets on. I think, like, those Guardians movies have real emotional stakes, real heartfelt cores to them, as silly as they are. Maybe that's a little trickier to navigate, you know, by going over the top with, you know, this R-rated Suicide Squad movie, but I think James Gunn has the chops. I think this cast certainly has the chops to get it done. And if they're fighting huge cosmic beast Starro in the end of this, this movie feels silly enough that it's contextually it makes sense, whereas David Ayer's version of we're all street level heroes and now we're fighting a god did not make sense. So expectation 7, I think it'll be pretty good, but my excitement's an 8. I'm a little juiced for this.
See, this trailer didn't get me excited at all. It actually probably had a negative effect on.
Oh, the old negative point swing. Was it a 2-point swing?
It was a negative 1-point swing, I would say. Yeah.
I think I still operate from a teenager's mindset, so.
Could be.
This is going to be your favorite movie ever.
How can it surpass
Mallrats? Schmallrats.
How dare you?
So, I would say that my excitement is probably around, I don't know, a 5. I'm not very excited for what I saw on the screen. However, I do know that it probably is going to be a good movie, so my expectation is still around an 8, because I think whenever I get to the theater or I fire it up on HBO Max, I'm going to be pleasantly greeted with a movie that's the quality of the two Guardians movies that I really, really liked.
Yeah.
Matt?
My expectation is, I'll say my excitement for it is probably about a 6. Definitely seems like something to watch on,
it's a movie.
Opening. It is a movie, after all.
It is something to watch.
It seems like the kind of thing that I would want to check out the weekend that it's released. So I anticipate that I will do that. You know what? I'm even going to say I'm at a 7 for really? Excitement. Just because it's a bit of an event type of thing. And then for expectations, based on the strength of this trailer, which I thought was virtually non-existent, and James Gunn's last movie, which I thought was kind of not that great, I gave it a 6, I think. I'm going to say my expectation is a 6 for this as well.
What was James Gunn's last movie?
Guardians 2. Guardians 1 was really good, but Guardians 2
did
was
he not have a
back.
Big hand in the Avengers movies, like the in Infinity War and Endgame? Was he not on set for some of that stuff? I thought he at least some of the Guardians
stuff. He helped direct and definitely write all the Guardians stuff for those movies. So, but yeah, I mean, it was still all in, the Russo brothers direction. Everything was pulled a little bit tighter, a little more grounded, you know, for those movies. But, yeah, like, I want to sit down and watch both Guardians again. I want to watch both Ant-Mans again. Are they on Disney Plus?
They are.
They are?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe I'll do that tomorrow. Maybe I'll just fuck off working all day. I'll just watch Marvel movies.
What's that different than any other?
So it's a day.
You know, most of the day I just draw.
No shit.
But maybe tomorrow I won't draw. Maybe tomorrow I'll just watch movies. Not television, Matt. I'll watch movies.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, it's not movies or it's not TV. It's HBO Max or whatever the tagline is.
Yeah, it's not TV. It's time well spent.
So is there, before we wrap up, is there anything coming up, be it something new, something you haven't seen that you're looking forward to seeing? What is, in the context of tonight, just barely moving your needle that you're the slightest bit positive about?
On a scale of Mallrats to...
Well, Mallrats is the big end for me. But, I mean... We're not talking about the Mallrats sequel. We mean the original. That's how much I love the original. Because not everyone that listens to this listened to...
To find out how much he really loves Mallrats, subscribe to our Patreon. You'll get a good story.
Yeah, so...
Is there anything... I can't name it. Not really.
Book, TV show, you know...
The album, no, nothing on the horizon. It's barren. I'm looking out there, and I don't see anything.
There's a lot for me.
Yeah, cool.
Yep.
Do it.
You want me to list them?
At least one.
King Kong versus Godzilla in a couple days.
Yeah, you're pretty amped about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
What if the Bad Batch is in it?
Uh-oh. I think the Mortal Kombat movie is something that I'm not interested. It's not going to be good, but if we're going to watch it together as a couple of friends,
that makes it exciting.
I'm interested.
The potential home field trip.
That's right. And then there's some scuttlebutt about a new Iron Maiden album coming out soon. There hasn't been one in over 5 years. So that's kind of exciting. And then I've been taking a deep dive on books lately, and I have been loving what I'm reading, and I'm excited to, like, I want to read even faster so I can get to the next book. That's how.
Maybe next week we should do The Passion of McSauce and talk about some of the.
Oh, I like that for Easter. That's great.
For an Easter episode, what are the things that we would die on the cross for right now?
Like, there's going to be huge fucking news next week that'll prevent us from doing. It'll be like, Star Wars was sold to Robert Kirkman.
Yeah. Yeah. The Sebastian Stan is doing a Luke Skywalker series.
Yeah.
And after watching the second episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier, every time I look at him, I'm like, God damn it. He does look like...
The biggest revelation.
Look like the post Jedi Mark Hamill that I want to see.
He really does. The biggest revelation, at least at the Sharpley household, is how attractive Sebastian Stan is with his haircut to my wife. She's like, this is the same actor that was the Winter Soldier, right? And I'm like, yeah, it's the same guy. He just looks so handsome. And I'm like, yeah, he's a fucking movie star. He's handsome. Well, all movie stars don't have to be handsome, asshole.
I mean, Steve Buscemi.
Movie star. Touche, you got me there. But yeah, same guy, haircut. She's like, oh, he's so handsome.
Who's the ugliest actor? Let's very quickly.
Clint Howard.
Clint Howard, yeah, he's pretty bad, huh? Is there an uglier one?
Than Clint Howard? Clint Howard's, I mean, he's pretty hard to look at. R.I.P.
Is he dead?
I think so.
Well, then he's not the ugliest living actor that we have. I don't know. Well, then maybe that's another...
Then Steve Buscemi.
Poor Steve Buscemi. Maybe that's another episode down the road. Something that we're passionate about.
Something that we can really research. Who's the ugliest
really actor. Sink our teeth into their deformed heads. So
Howard is not dead.
Oh, okay. Jesus well, then
the rumors of his demise were greatly exaggerated.
All right. Well, do we have another one last segment that we can jump into?
We do. We can be quick with it because we're getting up against time here. And I know the fans hate to get teased like that, you know, with just the tip. So let's give it to them here tonight.
So, Matt, you read a rumor that Warner Brothers is ready to sell off DC, to license out DC to other publishers.
That seems to be kind of where things look like they could be going because, you know, it's no secret that, that DC is kind of reining in the amount of comic books that they're putting out there. There's definitely changes in the comic book industry as far as distribution. Things got kind of shaken up last year when DC kind of pulled out of Diamond Comics. Looks like Marvel's pulling out now, and they're going to be distributed by Penguin Random House or something. And there's all kinds of like weird things. And right now, the current thing seems to be with DC is they're trying to produce more like young adult sort of graphic novel type things. More in the vein of a manga, which apparently has been eating American comics lunch now for like 20 years. There are indications that AT&T, the parent company of Warner, which is the parent company of DC, doesn't want to produce comic books anymore. They want to own Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, but they don't want to make comic books. It's kind of like a not super profitable business for them. So why not license out these characters, make money on licensing them out, and let some other company worry about trying to get people to buy comic books, which if you're one of these big companies, you're stupidly probably going to look at it as a totally fruitless endeavor. I don't think that's the case. I think there is still money to be made if only the comic books were good.
Well, that's the real asterisk on your statement, isn't it?
I think it's possible. Do I think possible it's going to happen?
For good comic books. Is that what you're saying?
I know that sounds outrageous, having been spoon-fed garbage comics now for the last 15 years.
Oh, num, num, num. Give it to me. I love garbage.
But we know it's possible. And I do think that there is a market that could, of the lapsed comic book buyer, that could come back if the comic books that are produced are good. I don't think that people's passion for this stuff, like if it's good, is dead. I think it can be resurrected. I feel like I'm one of those people. You start making good comic books, guess who's going to be buying a lot of comic
books? But I don't think you're going to get good comics for you. I don't think anyone's going to make your comic books again.
I think it's possible.
Random House or whoever else picks up the DC license, like they're going to be like, hey, it's 2021. Not all these characters need to be white guys anymore. And like they're going to run with Yara Flor. They're going to run with the new Black or Green Lantern with the goggles. Like they're going to just push all this stuff because they're already out there. There is a comic reader constituency that knows these characters, and like that's what they're gonna do. Like they're not just gonna immediately fall back and do.
I think you're wrong.
Regular old Superman again.
I think like, you're absolutely wrong.
So, but
the sales numbers indicate that you're wrong. There are, what does Superman sell now? 40,000 copies a month, something like that. It could at least double or get closer to 100,000 if the comic book is made well. I know it's a big ask. I don't think it's really going to happen. I'm just saying it could happen.
Do you think they'd still try to do monthlies, or would they just?
I think they could
look into the graphic
monthlies.
Novel market.
I think they could still do monthlies, but I think what has to happen is the control needs to be put back into the creators, and let the larger parent companies take a step back. And not put mandates on these creators.
They gave
Brian
Bendis all the control of Superman, and that book stinks.
Well, maybe he wasn't the right guy for it. And also, I think maybe it's impossible to do in 2021, but let the creators run with stuff and not put any kind of social mandates on anything. Just, like, create good stories with really good art. And I think that those are two really compelling things that will bring back a ton of lapsed customers.
It's such an objective thing, because you don't think the creators that are making these books now don't think they're making stories to the best of their ability or stories they want to read?
I don't. Well, I mean,
they
maybe.
Are. They're just not what you want to read.
Maybe. It's not what anybody wants to read.
They're what they want
to
read.
The sales numbers reflect that.
The sales numbers may reflect that, but
the best creators,
I don't believe the creators are not putting out something that they are really proud of and passionate about. You act like they're just mailing it in.
I don't think they're mailing it in.
They're writing the stories you want to read.
I don't think anybody is putting out stories that anybody wants to read. And the reason why I say that is because nobody's buying this shit. Nobody's buying these comic books. If the comic book stories were better, I think a lot of the people that don't buy comics anymore would start buying them again. I don't think it's like difficult to figure that out. I think it's pretty obvious that people quit buying books because they weren't very good. I think if they put the control back in creators' hands, and gave like a lot of maybe A-list talent that might exist over at like Image or something like that, some real control on some of these books, or like an editor in chief that maybe isn't Jim Lee. The rumor is maybe Robert Kirkman is interested in getting the license for DC Comics. I think that would be pretty cool. Although, what's his net worth, Ian? $40 million? I don't think he has the cash to do something like that.
$40 million. Do you think that he would be the right person to shepherd DC Comics? Based on his track record.
I don't know what that would entail. I don't know if it would be a very hands-off approach or a very hands-on approach. I think if it's hands-off, then yeah, I think it could work.
So then why would it be important for him to be the one to secure the license?
Because I still think that he understands storytelling and comics and like basic comic book principles. I feel like the interesting thing about Kirkman is he wasn't a slave to any of like sort of the big two gimmick type things like renumbering comics or whatever. He ended two of the best-selling comic books in the industry way before their prime was like over. You know, he could still be producing The Walking Dead and making a mint off of that, but he's not because the story was over, because he had respect for whatever that story was. So I think a guy like him that is willing to put the story ahead of the dollar and let the strength of the story then make the money and not rely on renumbering gimmick type things like the death of a character that's just going to come back 3 issues later or a year later, whatever, I think might not be that bad of a choice to sort of be in charge. I definitely think a comic guy that maybe isn't like long in the tooth at one of the big companies like a Jim Lee would be my preferred candidate.
But he has been in the game for like 20 years. So, I mean, what are we talking about? Like when we say long in the tooth, I mean,
long in the tooth at one of the big companies.
Yeah. I mean, Robert Kirkman.
So if you worked a long time at one of the big two, you're not even reading that resume.
I mean, I'd probably read it.
But since Robert Kirkman's your Image guy, like, he gets a thumbs up. So this is comic nepotism that you're talking about.
No, this isn't like James Gunn's brother type.
What about Jason Aaron? He's kind of had license to write the stories he wants to write. He's been a successful writer. Some of the contradictory stuff that Tom King has.
Look,
and Jason Aaron hasn't been around that long. Does Jason Aaron get does that resume pass your desk?
I don't know what happened here where I became the fucking GM of the situation. I have to pick the coach, But if that's the case, no. Jason Aaron does not.
You're the owner. You have to pick the GM.
Okay. Okay. So Jason
Aaron.
And
then the coach will be who? Robert Kirkman, because we already know who your GM is going to be.
This isn't a curse, man. This is a blessing.
Okay. No. Jason Aaron does not get the job. I have liked very little that he has done.
See, that's funny you say that, because I have the same reaction to Robert Kirkman. I feel like Robert Kirkman is a one-hit wonder that got very, very lucky with one property that just happened to blaze through and capture the zeitgeist at the right moment. But every other thing that I've read from Robert Kirkman, I feel has been bad, like actively bad. Like, I know you guys like Invincible. I think it's fucking bad. I don't like anything else that he's ever written.
I don't think I've read anything but Walking Dead and Invincible.
Battle Pope. You ever read Battle Pope?
Marvel Zombies.
No.
It was. I mean, I enjoyed it at the time, but I mean, yeah, that's like almost 20
years
ago.
It's a long time ago. But I think that granting Robert Kirkman carte blanche over the DC Universe would, while I like some of the things that you said about him being a comic book guy and not overly exposed to the big two, because I think that there is some freshness that needs to be interjected, I don't think he would be a great person.
I didn't suggest him as my number one pick. That's just the rumor that's out there that he has interest in it.
Do you have a number one pick?
Well, Matt, hold on to that thought. In that line of thinking, I do like the idea of a comic guy picking up these licenses, because I think if like Scribner picks up DC and they're going to make books there, it's going to be
Scribner?
Bottom line.
What is that?
They're a book publisher, like Random House, but not Random House. Like, if
why didn't you just say Random House?
Because we used that example a billion times already. If a big,
so we got to use one nobody's ever heard of.
So you had to actively make up a name.
Yeah,
they're real. If a big,
you're like, why doesn't Bic just pick it up? They make pens. They can also make the fucking thing that pens write.
That's right.
Which are comic books.
All right, fuck faces. If Random House picks up DC,
Why doesn't Bud Light make comic books?
Random House is still gonna look at DC.
Do you hear the NFL is buying DC Comics?
Awesome! I can't wait for that. Ray Lewis,
Super Pros coming back.
You know what? I'm pretty excited about Vince McMahon buying DC Comics.
Here we go.
XDCL. I'm pretty juiced. Then maybe The Rock can buy it after that and reboot it. But yeah, I think if a big book publisher buys the license, it's going to be more of the same as we've been getting, which is going to be, you know, we need to push
it's
sales
and
what we think the readers want, and it's not going to be, hey,
it's going to be
just write
driven.
A good Superman story.
Exactly. Yeah, man, who would be the ideal candidate? I don't know. But, like, when I think about Jim Lee in the earlier days of his tenure, you know, in charge at DC, like with the New 52, when that first started, the excitement around it was real. It didn't last long, but it was legitimate and it was very exciting. Joe Quesada, in his earlier days as the editor-in-chief at Marvel Comics, that was exciting. He rejuvenated Spider-Man, who was pretty, like, boring overall. Like, it wasn't very good. And then he rejuvenated Spider-Man with Ultimate Spider-Man. So I think a guy like that needs to come in and sort of be at the head of it. I don't know exactly who that could be. I've liked what I've read of Kirkman. I think it's at least always good, sometimes great. Kind of like a Christopher Nolan movie.
So Christopher Nolan should pick up the DC license.
Christopher Nolan is going to pick up the DC license. There you go. The books are all going to be like 90 pages.
We're not really going to understand them by the end.
You open up the books and it's going to have like one of those things where you have a birthday card and opens up and it starts playing music. Every one of them is going to be scored by Hans Zimmer.
That's
you open
right.
Up, it's like,
all the pages are going to be out of order. Upside down.
Just to complete choose your own. Just put it together yourself.
Yeah, right.
That's essentially...
You have to cut the panels out with scissors and just relay.
That's essentially what I hear we got from Tenet, but you weren't allowed to put it in the right order. I think that's going to do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Matt Cassell.
We'll see you next time.